This is a podcast from meow.net.
Meow!
As a social practice artist, I sometimes visit schools and lead creative activities with children. Teachers tell the class they must be good listeners. But what is a good listener? Am I a good listener? Listening can be hard to describe or define. It depends on your relationships, your context, your intentions for listening. I'd like my community-based art practice to be open and collaborative, and so surely listening is very important. My name is Hannah Kemp Welsh, and this series is part of my research into listening within social art practice. In these episodes, I speak to socially engaged, community and participatory artists to understand how they listen within their practice, what gets in the way of listening, and what the consequences of listening might be. Episode 4, Lady Kit, Building Listening into Everything. I first experienced Lady Kit's work at an event called Structures of Community at CCA in Brighton. They invited practitioners to a social practice surgery, offering one-to-one support for social art conundrums. Kit works on long-term collaborative projects driven by insatiable curiosity about how art can be useful. To start us off, could you tell us a little bit about your practice, please?
I get called a socially engaged artist quite a lot. I don't necessarily love that term, but I guess we might chat about that in a little bit. I tend to call what I do mess making as social glue. I'm really interested in how stuff that gets called art and creativity can be useful to people.
Could you tell us a little bit about the context that you work in? So how do the projects that you work on come about, and what sorts of groups do you work with?
I tend to work with groups on and off over a very long period of time. Sometimes they're groups that have a formal structure. Sometimes those are groups that I am part of as a co-author, co-initiator. Some of them are groups that I'm not part of. I go in and work alongside that group. And very occasionally I do work with a group that I don't really know very well, and maybe an organisation invites me, or maybe the group invites me to go and do some work with them. But generally, particularly over the last 4 or 5 years, I guess, I've worked on and off with the same groups and the same people on a variety of related but slightly different projects. And those, these sort of emotional, creative, social bits of those projects happen through a combination of stuff that I'm interested in and want to explore and think could be different, and stuff that other people think have those interests or whatever, or motivations for as well. And that's a very kind of slow, iterative, wandering, meandering sort of process that is then punctuated by the sort of practical, how do we actually make that stuff happen? And then that's where the kind of financial support and partnership support and stuff comes in.
Yeah, and that bit can be really difficult.
Just a couple of weeks ago, I did a little bit of data sort of scrummaging, sort of thinking about the way that projects happen, and it was quite illuminating and a bit surprising, really. So I kind of went through all the data of how many things I've applied for over the last year, and of those, how many have been successful, and how much money I've earned over the last year, what percentage of that money has come from stuff that I've applied for, and what percentage of that money has come from stuff that's happened in other ways. I apply for about 3 things a month. My success rate is tiny. But of the money that I earn, not just this year, actually, like last year as well, about 60% of that comes from relationships that happened because of an unsuccessful application. which I hadn't realised that at all until I actually sat down and looked at all of the stuff. And I was like, that's fascinating, isn't it?
It really is. I'm thinking back and my unsuccessful applications end in a sort of, we regret to inform you there is no opportunity to receive feedback due to the high volume of applications. And yet within that, you've managed to find some new supportive relationships. I wonder, on the theme of relationships, whether or not you could say a bit more about the collaborative element of your work. Is your work always collaborative?
Specifically in the way that I work, it's always up for grabs. So I think I'm keen to find loads of different ways of working that offer opportunities to do stuff in interesting ways. And for me, some of that is how involved am I in any of these projects? Which bits am I involved in? I definitely come to all projects talking and thinking about the fact that I've got a lot of interest and enthusiasm for and some skills in supporting people to work together and listen to each other and to make physical stuff, and that I would definitely be interested in being involved in projects that have some element of that in them. But then from then on, who knows what might happen. So might work with a specific group or in a specific situation that means I end up doing things that I hadn't expected at all, and that people take the lead with stuff that I would usually sort of think, oh, that's probably something that I'll end up doing, but then I might not. So I guess I consider my role to be a lot of initial scene setting and a lot of gathering together the practicalities that create an opportunity for people to, as much as possible, do what they want to do. And so loads of that will be to do with access. And I work with a really amazing social producer called Sarah Lee, and they deal with a lot of the practicalities of that. And every project is set up with a real focus on access and finding out what that means for different people. There's always a lot of that beforehand and at the start of a project that creates a situation for different types of collaboration to happen.
That's super interesting and important. Do you have a method for making projects maximum accessible?
It sort of has three stages, and the first stage is what I think of as reaching in motion. And so that's about, how do we reach out to each other? Specifically, how do people who've initiated the project, which is usually artists and organisations, how do we put ourselves out in that reaching out, and how do we not expect people to come to us? And so loads of that is about access. And then that's also about, how can everybody involved identify barriers that we might have to connecting with each other and to saying stuff that we want to say and to doing stuff that we want to be able to do. So that's like a really important kind of bit at the beginning of the project. And then I guess like the middle bit-ish, this is all very flexible, the way that projects happen, I think of as transparencies. So as like working and thinking in public. So that's about, how can we all be as open as possible about what we want to do and how we're doing it and what we think the benefits of that are, what's complicated, etc. And then all of that based on this idea of transparencies, like how do we allow for making a big mess, for failure, for vulnerability, for all of that stuff that a lot of kind of wider art structures not really set up for, but actually are the places where I think the most interesting stuff happens.
And what really strikes me is that all those processes and those methods take time, they take care. You need some sort of like sustainable grounding from which to do that work.
For a long time, I've thought, why don't MPOs particularly employ artists on long-term or even permanent contracts, especially as more and more organisations are interested in working in really sort of sociable, long-term ways? It just seems to make a lot of sense
for the type of work they want made, for the type of interactions they want, for longer term stability of the arts in general, but like I suppose particularly working in these kind of like longer, slower and more collaborative ways. So for quite a long time I've just thought, I don't really understand why that doesn't happen. So that's turned into this project, which is called Permanently Incidental, which is basically me trying to persuade organisations that they should have long-term or permanent social artist in residence roles in their organisations. So at the moment, I'm working with a few organisations in County Durham to try and actually make one of these happen.
That's a really exciting prospect. Do you do a lot of that sort of institutional change work alongside your community practice?
Quite a lot of my work is about how social art methodologies can be used in organisational practice. And at the moment, a lot of that happens with me just working quite short term with organisations, which is dead frustrating for me and them, because that stuff takes a long time, doesn't it? So it's a, yeah, it'll happen eventually. There's going to be like permanent social art residencies all over the country.
Hooray. I'm interested as well in the nuts and bolts of projects. I was wondering if you could say something about how you get started on a new collaborative venture.
If I'm starting working with a group who I maybe haven't worked with before, or who maybe I have but haven't worked with each other very much before, one of the things that I really love to do is collaborative sandwich making, which is basically what it sounds like. So massive pile of different breads, loads of different fillings. Everybody in the group pairs off and spends some time, each person in the pair, telling the other person what their perfect sandwich is. And then the pairs make each other the perfect sandwich. So person A will say, this is what I like. And then person B will go away and make that for person A and the other way around. And then everybody eats or at least tastes the sandwich that's been made for them. And then there's a bit of time for feedback and talking about, like, was that the perfect sandwich? If it wasn't, like, why wasn't it? And a lot of that's about communication methods and, like, how much good listening did somebody do? How much good explaining did somebody do? Like, how are those methods of connecting and communicating working between those two people, and having like a little bit of a think about that? And then if there's time, there's an invitation to then make a pudding sandwich, which is much more creative, and that's much more taking the stuff that you found out about that person and then doing something sort of wild and creative with it, as opposed to following their specific instructions. So I guess thinking about how can you take what you know about somebody and create something nice for them that isn't specifically what they've asked for, and what's the difference between that and doing something that's exactly what somebody's asked you to do? And then there'll be a little chat about that. Then there's a chance to go round and everyone can share their experiences of what it was like. Very importantly, after that, there's tidying up. So for me, a big part of working in this way is about making a mess physically and conceptually and in loads of different ways. But then also, if you're going to do that, what are the boundaries for that? And how do you make sure that the tidying up happens at the end or at various points through that? And like, how's that negotiated? Who takes responsibility for that? How do we sort of manage that? Yeah, so that's a really important part of it then, is the tidying up. And then after the tidying up, there's another set of conversations where people might start to talk about what happened with the tidying up. Because usually what happens with a group that don't know each other very well is that there are quite specific roles that people start to take on. So some people are like, get stuck in, do it all. Yeah, busy, busy, busy. Some people really want to help but don't know how to. So they sort of feel really uncomfortable, and some people just aren't interested in helping at all. They just sit around and gossip. And all of that stuff's great. And actually, all, like, you need to be able to have bits of all of those things. But if that just keeps happening and people aren't happy with that, then it's rubbish and it ends up making things not very happy and people fall out and it's not a good atmosphere for working together. So then we would have a chat about, oh, so who took the initiative, who felt really comfortable to do stuff, who wanted to do stuff but didn't really know how to, who saw other people busy and thought, oh, I'm not going to interfere with that, they're fine. And then how does that work in a longer kind of creative endeavour together? How might those things pan out? And then quite often after that, we would have a session about creating like a manifesto or an agreement or something about how the group then want to work together and sort of manage tidying up and making a mess and stuff like that. There's quite a lot of stuff about working in these ways that is about human chemistry, and some of that can be developed over a long time by somebody thinking about how they might do that. And some of that will just happen in the room with whoever happens to be there, or not. And you know, I've been doing it for quite a long time, and I can still get into a room with a group and think, do you know what, this probably isn't going to work. And there is just, you know, there's just some magic alchemic chemistry stuff that goes on that is definitely part of it. And I think it can be a bit uncomfortable to talk about that because it sounds a bit airy-fairy and people think artists are just full of nonsense anyway and like all of that stuff. But I just think it's really important to acknowledge that that is also part of it. Yeah, there are really practical things you can do, and I'll talk a bit about some of the practical things that I do. And yeah, there's lots of learning that can be done, like on the coalface of art, as one of my lovely friends calls it, learning that you can do by just doing it and being supported by other people who do it. But there is just that other stuff as well, which we all know because we just naturally get on really well with some people and naturally just really don't get on with some other amazing, lovely people who we don't have anything against. But for some reason, that little spark just isn't there. And I do think it's, even though it can sort of feed into stereotypes about artists and stuff, it is important to talk about that as well, that kind of less easy to grab hold of stuff. Yeah.
And speaking of less easy to grab hold of stuff, I was wondering if you could say something about the role of listening in your collaborative practice.
Yeah, it's a really vital bit of everything in my life, really. And I think I probably spent a lot of my life not doing good listening and sort of, you know, making sympathetic sounds and having a good sympathetic face, but not actually really capturing as much information as I had the capacity to. And then also, I think I would just take that and do what I wanted to do with it, as opposed to then reflecting it back to people and making sure that I had actually understood what people were trying to communicate to me and not just what I wanted them to be saying or like the highlights or, you know, whatever. I mean, one of the things that I do is I just talk about that quite a lot, and I talk about the fact that it's something that I'm often quite rubbish at and sort of invite people to pull me up on it as well. So I think that's really, I guess, before I was talking a bit about vulnerability and failure and all of that stuff, for me, that's quite vital, is being very upfront about the fact that I do value this massively and I think it's really important, but that doesn't make me automatically good at it, and that I need and really appreciate people saying, oh, actually, you've completely misunderstood what I'm trying to tell you here or whatever. And I suppose because we use the word listening, there's an idea that maybe that's all listening using our ears, which I definitely don't mean when I talk about listening. There's like loads of different ways, aren't there, of taking in the information that people want to share with you. And I think that's probably quite important as well, to keep considering the apparatus that we use for listening and making sure that we're offering and using a variety of different tools and channels, I guess, for doing that. if I'm quickly sort of talking about my work, I say it's mess making as social glue. But I guess a real vital component of that social glue is listening well and developing sort of community listening practices. And that's part of it as well, that listening happens in different ways in different groups. And to not come into a group and assume that the way I usually do listening is going to work for that group. And I am just interested in the act of using your ears as well. So just sitting and taking in the sounds that are in a room and having a think about that and enjoying that or not. And then, oh, actually, that particular sound is making everyone feel a bit uncomfortable. So is there something that we can do to make it more comfortable? And then, yeah, have a better circumstance for doing the stuff that we really want to be getting on with. I guess there's some really boring stuff as well about good listening, which is just building it into everything. So at the beginning of a session, have a check-in. How is everybody doing? Is there anything people want to share? Is there anything that anybody wants to ask anyone else about what that means for them today? And then at the end, my favourite one, which is from Dan Russell, who's an amazing artist who I work with sometimes, who would also recommend checking out. When we first worked together about 4 years ago, maybe, he'd said, oh, what's the why bother of the project? And I was like, huh, that's a bit rude. Like, it's my life's work. But yeah, since then have come to love and really appreciate that question about like why bother. So, and that's a great opportunity to listen to what's currently important to each other. Yeah, it's been dead good. Yeah, really, really useful.
Ways of Listening is a series for Meanwhile in an Abandoned Warehouse, a podcast about cultural democracy in community art. Show notes with links to the projects discussed are available at meow.net. This episode was recorded and produced by Hannah Kemp-Welsh.